It's Friday.
Hello.
Hello.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Yes, this is the first Friday of 2014.
Friday the
whatever
3rd of January today.
Yeah. Or the 10th. Is it? No, it's the 10th. Anyway, it's Friday,
10th.
Folks, and you're listening to Vicky Dodd, who is at Vickyville on Twitter, V-I-K-K-I, and...
at Techno Teacher, that's Alan O'Donoghue, or Mr. Raspberry Jam as well.
That's right. Not the Mr. Raspberry Jam that is in a certain game.
Auto. No.
So we are teachers of computing. We used to be teachers of ICT, and then a couple of years ago we made the move to teaching computing, and we record this podcast each week with ideas and things that we've been trying with our classes. We don't class ourselves as experts, but we're... Vicky's shaking her head.
I'm not an expert in anything at the
moment.
But
we are trying to. And we share with you our trials and our tribulations, all the things that have happened. And did you get anything geeky for Christmas?
Nothing. I bought a geeky present. Well, it's not geeky. I bought my son, which I'm very embarrassed about, an Xbox 360 and GTA. Well, I didn't buy this for my son. GTA 5. That was came into my house.
Grand Theft Auto 5.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you played it yourself?
No. Oh, I have actually. Yeah. I was going to say no. Yes, I have. I was forced into it.
Is it amazing, the graphics and everything?
Yeah, the graphics are fantastic. Couldn't quite master the controls of driving a car. I did just as good as a job.
It's not just about driving a car, is it?
On a normal road.
Is it? But it's not just about driving a car.
No. There's lots of other controls. You can get your hair cut and all sorts.
Yeah, and you have to go and shoot people and do...
I didn't do any of that.
No, you're a good girl.
No, I didn't do any of that. I didn't fancy that.
And I did I get any geeky presents? No, not especially, but I bought some geeky presents for people.
What were your geeky presents you bought for people?
So, I bought my son a Raspberry Pi and a Pi camera. Now, we've already got stacks of Raspberry Pis at home, but he's got this idea about recording a skate video. So he's into skateboarding.
Yeah.
And he's got this idea about recording a skate video, but you could say we'll just use a normal video camera, but he wants to record it from the skateboard's point of view.
Yeah, I can imagine that would be cool.
But the problem is you can't really be pressing buttons and stuff. Oh, there's the bell for the end of the day. you can't really... Well, you can buy these low pro cameras as well. GoPro, low pro.
GoPro.
Yeah. But they cost quite a bit of money. And a skateboard, his skateboard gets absolutely wrecked. So at least if it's a £20 camera, £20 Pi, the idea is to try and program it and see what you can do.
So he's going to fix it onto his skateboard?
Eventually.
He should look at the Martin O'Hanlon, because he did that, didn't he, with his car.
Ah, yes. But all that he's managed to do so far is... We were just hacking games on Boxing Day or Christmas Day. Yeah, we took the squirrel game, you know, the pie game version of squirrel.
Yeah.
I didn't know, Patrick, this is my son, showed me, you can actually run pie game from the console, from the bash, you know, the shell.
Yeah.
In Python. Sorry, not Python. In Raspbian. So bash is the command line environment.
Yeah.
And you can just type Python in and straight away you go into Python. You can type Python and then the name of a game and it opens the game. And if it's Pi game, it works. And it actually, because you're not running the X Windows environment as well, it's just a little bit sleeker. It's not having to worry about all those kind of things.
It goes faster.
And then you've got Nano as well. Or do you say Nano?
Nano.
So you've got Nano as well, which you can use to edit it. So that's what Patrick's been doing. He's going to bring it to the Raspberry Jam tonight to show people.
Excellent.
So that's how our geeky Christmas went. Now, what have you been doing with the Year 10s, your GCSE computing class, or what are you about to do?
Well, I had a couple of geeky days over the Christmas break where I literally sat in front of a computer for 2 days and wrote up exemplar controlled assessments for A453, the controlled assessment programming task, Guess My Number and the Magic 8-Ball. And at the moment, I am intending to prepare them to complete task one of the A453 programming task. I was planning to do it before half term, but it'll have to be the couple of weeks after half term. So at the moment today, this week, what they've been doing is just some Python recap. I set them up in was Pinky Partners. Very cleverly organised the teams, actually, the pairs, and it works really well. But what I've done is set up, out of my programming, the programming challenges books that are on CAS, just selected a few of those, really with increasing difficulty and using different programming techniques. And out of the 8 challenges I've set them for this week, 3 of them require write-up.
Okay, so it's the documentation that you're trying to get them to work on.
I'm recapping the programming in terms of using variables, data types, user input, conditionals, and then iteration, but also using the random and time modules. So I'm recapping that. But what I'm also then building in is they've got to construct, say, a flowchart for one of the challenges, and then they've got to write another one out in pseudocode, and then for another one they've got to do an analysis success criteria. Just to get them right, okay, I know how to solve these problems because they're really simple, but it's actually the write-up. And I spoke to them today about the controlled assessments, when they would be starting them, and the percentage of marks that are for programming, but then the write-up. And if they don't produce the write-up, unfortunately, they won't get the grade.
And that's a bit of a wake-up call for them, because they think it's all about solving the problem and having the code that
does it. They love the coding. Yeah, yeah. They love the coding. They could do the coding. I've got no doubt about that. But in a class with 27 boys out of 28...
And one girl,
I know that only one will do, or, you know, in all likelihood, only one will do a decent write-up.
So when I get a daily email from CAS where it tells, like, what's been happening on the Computing at School forum, and when I opened it this morning, it said that you'd uploaded your Magic 8-Ball resources, and I went to have a look at it. And I think did you only put it on there yesterday?
Because it says OCR GCSE exemplar controlled assessments.
And it says they've
not been endorsed. They're not verified by OCR, although I've emailed OCR just to ask them if they could have a quick look at them. But it's just basically a write-up to show the evidence that's required.
Yeah.
In the different sections that they should be aiming to produce.
But what I was going to say was, you put it on there yesterday.
Yesterday, yeah.
And when I looked this morning at 6 a.m. or whatever it was, 100. It said 126 people.
200 and something downloads.
Since yesterday, gosh.
Yeah. But I was also looking at the resources on CAS, and you can sort the resources by popularity.
Ah.
And my programming, Python Programming Challenges Book 2, is actually, I think it's in the top few. I didn't know that.
Is it more popular than Book 1?
Yeah.
Yeah.
CAS is more popular than Book 1.
That's funny, because these podcasts... over Christmas, quite a few emails come through. They say every time you've had 1,000 downloads, so we're up to something like, I've had 49 emails now saying that that you don't get an email after that. It just says you've reached 1,000 on this. But some, like the second and third episode of these we recorded, it's never reached 1,000. But like episode 5, 6, and 7 are on, like, I don't know, 4,000 or something. They've had quite a lot. So. When we last discussed doing controlled assessments with the OCR GCSE computing course, I think you said you were not now going to do it all in one sitting.
No, last year I did it all in one sitting, and it was 20 hours, and it was a long time. That was 10 weeks. What I found, well,
it's a long time not to
talk to class. But not only that, the tasks increase in complexity, and I think for task one, it's the one that we've chosen to do. It's a fairly simple programming task that they would be capable of doing now. So if I can get them used to doing the write-up, then hopefully by the end of task 3, they'll be really fantastic at the write-up, and they won't have then had enough at the end of 20 hours.
Sure.
So I can break it down that way.
That's great. It's fantastic you're sharing all these resources
issue is with breaking it down and separating the tasks out is how much time you allocate for each task. Because task one, technically, is the easier one, so it shouldn't require as many hours, but it's worth the equal number of marks.
Yeah.
And to be honest, what I found last year is task one will take ages over because they want to get it right, and they're getting used to the structure and what they need to produce. So by task 3, they're actually taking less time. But the programming takes longer.
But you can control that. You can say, we're going to spend 4 hours on task one, and then we're going to stop.
Yeah, that's
and if you haven't finished,
intention.
If you haven't finished,
you'll use time at the end.
At the end, you can come back to it.
Yeah. And I was also reviewing the OCR guidance documents for the controlled assessments over the holidays, and I gave that a close read. And it was interesting about the amount of control. mm-hmm. that they say you need, there's a high amount of control obviously for task setting because sure. they issue the tasks, but the rest is actually medium control. Yeah. And the feedback that you can give to your class, you can give verbal feedback.
Yes.
It just cannot be, it's got to be general feedback.
Yeah.
It cannot be specific. Yeah. A lot of people assume that in a control assessment they need to sit in silence, and no, they don't.
No, and I mean, I have said that. I impose silence for much of the lesson, but I'm doing that because there's a piece of paper I sign where I have to say, I can verify that this is the children's own unaided work.
In OCR, they're actually supposed to do an element of group work. For an element of group work where they test each other's and they can review and feedback on each other's work. So for the programming task, they would perhaps feedback on the programs, how they work, and also what could make them more efficient.
But then that
has to be included in the evaluation. Yeah.
And then the other thing, I just find that they're more productive when they're not sat around chatting to each other, getting on with what they're supposed to do. That's my thread of thought to do with all of those. No.
But you've been doing the little man computer assembly.
I actually feel like I'm starting to make a breakthrough now with that, because I know before Christmas I was starting to think, you know what, I think I need to change from the little man computer. They've only actually spent 3 hours, I think, on the controlled part of this. So today, kind of last few moments before I came into the lesson, I decided to write a script for a little man computer program and share that with them. Nothing to do with the controlled assessment, it was just a program. And it takes three numbers from a user, it takes the first, second, and third value, and then it outputs them in reverse order. So what I did was I actually wrote the solution to it in the mnemonics on the whiteboard. So it was there as they came in the room. But I had done a couple of things. I'd made it a little bit longer than it needed to be. And then I also omitted a key line, which was the halt. So there has to be a bit.
HLT. Yeah.
So when they came in, and you remember I tried this out on you at break time.
Yeah.
I showed it to them. And you've no really previous experience.
No, I've not done the little computer now.
So there was three questions they had to answer. Was, what do you think that this script is going to do when you run it? Where's the fault? What do you think the fault is in it? And then one of the lines could be taken out and because it's redundant. Now, there was some things that really surprised me. You're actually sat in the room at the time. I don't know if you tuned out or not. But one child in the class who, it's a very long time since they impressed me with anything. They even struggled to get their book open at times. So I said, Jack, which question would you like to answer? And he kind of, on the spot, he said, the fault, I've spotted the fault is there's a halt missing from it. And I said, now I didn't go straight, I didn't go, yes. I kind of went, oh, so why do you say that? He says, well, because you have to have a halt in there to separate the instructions of the program from the data. And I was like,
I went, wow.
I said, if you weren't on the other side of the room, I could run over there and hug and kiss you, and that kind of distracted away from...
Is that the one you gave sweets to?
I did.
You bribed me.
Yeah, I went and gave him sweets afterwards, so I've got to be careful there. Hugging and kissing children, giving them sweets in class. They're going to be calling me Jivvy Stinny.
No!
Yeah.
Okay, anyway. Politically incorrect. Yeah.
So, and then the other thing that surprised me that I hadn't realised was... So there was a redundant line, which is... it takes a value, stores it, takes a second value and stores it. And what I'd put in there was I'd cannily made it store the third value and then load the third value. But anybody who's done this before would know that that value is already in the accumulator.
Mm-hmm.
So when I asked them in the class to work out what was the redundant one, somebody said, well, actually, you don't actually have to store the third value at all. And you don't, so you could actually take three lines out. And until he'd said that, I hadn't spotted that. And I was like, wow, and I really love it when children in the class have spotted things that I haven't.
Yeah.
Apart from,
So the third data line, you're keeping your instructions separate from your data, so you don't need the third data line.
If you're never planning to do anything again, we're talking about this now, and people listening to the podcast won't have a clue what we're talking about, but within the little man computer, it's got this thing where if you take a value and you want to refer to it again, you have to store it somewhere, and you have to put it in a box, which you then label that box with a name. So
the same as creating a variable.
Yeah. So if you're going to take, say somebody, what's the first number? What's the second number? What's the third number? You don't really have to go and store that third number unless you're planning to refer to it later on.
Right.
Okay. So
I've got another question.
Go on.
Not about that. Not about Little Man Computer. It's actually about the practical investigation controlled assessments. If anybody out there has managed to get App Inventor 2 working on a school network and working consistently, reliably, and properly, can you please let us know? Because so far my problems have been I've had it working once and in a demonstration, and then when I closed it, it would not work again for anybody.
It's a real shame because he was saying
that the local IP that it needs to listen to, it was as if it was just engaged, it was as if it was busy and that nothing would happen.
It's a real shame because App Inventor has got so much potential within it, and as children are more and more frequently owning Android phones, there's that real context that actually build something and take it away and have it work, and that you can't do as easily with Python.
It's the next stage up from scratch as well.
Yeah. And then there's the other thing, that there is a lot of materials out there. I mean, Carl Simmons and
Paula
from Edge Hill, they've written that book all about it, and one of the controlled tasks. I'd love for it to be able to work, but I just have struggled to get it to work myself in our school.
I haven't even managed to get it working properly at home.
No.
Not properly. The images weren't displaying.
What a shame.
Anybody's got any kind of hints, tips, or has managed to get it done, then please let us know. The bonus of the version 2 is it doesn't use Java. It's actually a download executable for the emulator, which then just is all web-based. But I just still can't get it working.
Now, something I want to mention, this is my little advert. Mm. So I started doing some online CPD sessions. I did three of those over the Christmas period.
Wow.
And I've been trying lots of different platforms. So I'm sticking now, I think, with Adobe Connect. Yeah, I know. I've tried some other ones, but it seems to do everything that I want so far.
Adobe Connect is really good.
But it costs a lot of money.
It costs a lot of money. They can download the app on an iPad and an iPhone.
That's right. It
works really well.
Yeah.
I've done Adobe Connect sessions.
And I bought some, it was funny, yesterday I went to buy a USB microphone, but I ended up buying a gamer headset. And there I am doing this online CPD session. I look like a proper gamer. Yeah. Because it cuts all the other noise out as well. But I've got now about 8 online CPD sessions that are taking place in the evenings. I think I'm going to add a few more on because the Python ones are very popular. And CPD for free is really taken off. So I'm in a school on Wednesday doing CPD for free. So they're getting it for free. I'm doing another one up in Cumbria. I'm doing one down in Barnstaple on the 5th and 6th of February. So I think we'll just pause it now and see if there's anything else to add into this podcast.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're at the Raspberry Jam in Preston, and it's Monday, and we've got lots of different activities going on in the room at the moment. I think we've got about 40 people here, something like that, and we've set up lots of different stations. We've got, as you'd normally see at a Raspberry Jam, we've got mums and sons, dads and daughters, wives, partners. And they've come along just to find out what's going on. And I've sat down at a table with the author and techno entrepreneur, Simon Monk.
Hello, Alan. How are you?
So, Simon, just tell us a little bit about yourself, like a minute or
okay,
so, what,
sure.
what you are and what you do.
Well, I'm a full-time author, and I write books about open-source hardware and Raspberry Pi in particular. So I've got a couple of books about Raspberry Pi out at the moment, the Raspberry Pi Cookbook, and also Programming the Raspberry Pi, which is a book about Python, essentially.
And there's videos that go with the cookbook. I bought them on
Did you?
Friday, yes.
I hope you're not going to ask for your money back.
No.
I'm not giving it you.
So,
yeah, all right.
And you've also, you say, open source hardware, so you've also written books about the Arduino as
Yes, Arduino and Yo-Yo, I-O-R-O, which is another platform that's .NET Gadgeteer as well, which is Microsoft's sort of take on open source hardware.
Now, this podcast is specifically for teachers to listen to, teachers who want to introduce computing into their classroom. And some of them listen to this to get, ideas.
Yeah.
Can you just think, for somebody who's not done a lot, really, yeah. is there a particular book that you would recommend that they might start with?
Yeah, I'm not going to turn down an opportunity like that, Alan. I think if you're... Well, my son is at high school at the moment, okay. and they've been learning Python. And I think if you have Raspberry Pis in your school and you want to learn Python, then... I do, hand on heart, I can actually recommend my programming the Raspberry Pi book, because it's a very gentle introduction to Python. It doesn't assume you can program when you start. It tries to lead you through the basics and really get you going on how to do it.
And I'm lucky enough to have a copy of that book. One of the things I particularly liked about that book is, even though in the title it mentions Raspberry Pi, a lot of the exercises in that book you can actually do without a Raspberry Pi.
Well, exactly, yes. Yeah. I mean, Python is Python. So really, there's a few chapters that are specific to the Raspberry Pi because they deal with interfacing hardware and things like that that you can't do on a PC. But it's also a useful resource if you're just learning about Python.
There's a particular chapter, in fact, it might be chapter 6, where it's all about file handling, and it's about writing files and opening files, which is actually very relevant to some of the GCSE computing assignments.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah. Oh, that's good, yeah.
And I think it was, when I bought it, I don't know, £7, £10, it wasn't a huge amount of money.
Okay, good. And it's available in electronic format as well, so...
From all good bookstores.
From all good booksellers,
So what have you brought with you tonight?
Okay, well, this is another venture that I've sort of started work on, which we've called Monk Makes. So there's a website called monkmakes.com.
And for the listeners at home, Simon is holding up a white box with a little cartoon picture on the front.
So this box is basically an electronic starter kit for the Raspberry Pi. So you don't need to do any soldering. It's completely plugged together. So it uses what's called solderless breadboard. And what you do is you poke components into different holes on the breadboard, and then you connect it up with jumper wires, all of which are supplied to the Raspberry Pi. And then accompanying the kit, there's a web page where you can download programs written in Python. Yep. That you can then run, that then interact with the electronics.
I can see one of the biggest appeals about this is, because there's no soldering involved, you don't have to mess up a classroom to do something like this.
No, exactly, yeah.
Apart from picking up the little bits of the
making
LEDs.
Sure you don't lose all the little bits is probably the tricky bit. Yeah.
Although, some of these components I'm looking at are standard components that if you needed to buy...
Yes,
a resistor that the legs had broken.
Oh yeah, you could get most. You could get all of this stuff, I think, from Maplin's if you needed to, or CPC or somewhere. So they are standard components that we use wherever possible, and with each, there's 10 projects that you can make, and each project has a little plan that shows you exactly how you connect up the components.
Sure.
And then a little what you need to do to run the test program and what you should expect it to do.
Brilliant.
Right.
So this whole package all comes together, and you said it's available from monkmakes.com.
And it's £15 for the...
£15?
Yes.
For the whole kit. Right, I thought you were going to say it's like...
Raspberry Pi not included, I
have of course. So you get a breadboard, you get all these components and these little project ideas.
Yeah, project cards, the software.
And then there'll be postage on top, I guess, when...
There is postage, I'm not sure. It's a couple of pounds. We also have these little things, which looks like nothing, but it's actually the most useful thing you could get for your Raspberry Pi if you're doing electronics.
It looks like a little card that indicates what the different pins are in the GPIO.
Yeah, exactly. And it's got little holes in it. So what you do is it just drops over the GPIO connector and basically labels every pin. So you don't have the old problem of having to count down the different pins to work out the one you want. You can just say, oh, I need to connect it to pin 23. That's that one.
Brilliant.
There. So it just makes life a bit easier when you're connecting things up.
I'm running out of time on this. just one thing, not talking about what you've got. If you were to describe to somebody who is listening to this but is not actually at this event, and you have to look around the room, how would you describe what you can see, what's going on?
Oh, well, I mean, the Raspberry Jams are very friendly events. That you get a really good mixture of people. You get a lot of sort of parents with kids, and you get teachers coming along trying to find out more about Raspberry Pi and see what people are doing with it, if they're getting ideas. I mean, that's one of the nice things about the Raspberry Pi, is it does develop a real community spirit. So, and people love to make things and then show off what they've been making, and it's a great place to come for ideas.
Thank you very much. And on Twitter, you're at
Simon Monk 2, because somebody else got Simon Monk 1 is an Australian artist. So.
So Simon Monk 2, and there's no
Simon
characters
Monk
or punctuation.
No, just at Simon Monk 2.
Thank you, Simon.
Okay, Alan.
And it's monkmakes.com.
Yes, thank you.
And now I'm at Darwin Vale High School. Is that what you call it?
Yeah.
And
I was here a few years ago and it looks completely different. So are you all sort of fairly new staff?
No.
No?
I've been here 9 years.
Okay, so I've got, sat in front of me, I've got four teachers at Darwin Vale, and we did have a fifth one, but he's had to go off. So we've got Neil, Becca, Joe, and Jill. So today your school has had CPD for free.
Yeah?
Has that been beneficial to you, do you think, in any way? Or
definitely. Yeah, 100%. It's been really good.
So have you ever been on courses before? Yourself?
Not as a department, no.
Not as a department?
No, individually we have, yeah. Which has been hard work.
Why is it hard work?
Going back and trying to deliver the information back and getting the information correct across to the staff.
Right, so you kind of go away, you have to bring all the notes back, and then you have to become like the course trainer,
yeah.
And you probably only get like an hour in which to do that, whereas the course was like 4 or 5 hours long.
Yeah.
So today your school's got the training for free because we were able to persuade 6 other people to come in, and it was Teach Python. Jill, have you ever done any Python programming before?
No, none at all.
How did you feel this morning when you came in?
Horrid. Now I feel a lot better.
Yeah,
like, I could teach at some year sevens.
And do you have a computing science background? Have you taught computing or ICT before?
No, never. And I've trained in businesses as well.
Oh, right. Okay. And if you had to teach a class tomorrow, something about Python, how would you feel about that now?
Fine.
You feel fine?
I think I could do it. Yeah, basic things. But.
All right. Okay. Becca, have you used Python before in any way?
Only on that course at Edge Hill. But we're very basic, and I've forgotten it by today.
Yeah.
But I understand it.
Was there anything practically today that you thought, oh, I could go and use that with a class?
Yeah, I think so. Like the starting, the hello and the chat bot, I think I could do. And then the guessing game I could do after a few attempts.
And Neil, you're teaching a GCSE class at the moment. You're sharing a class with another teacher.
Yeah.
Was there anything today that made you wonder or think differently about what you've been teaching with your GCSE class?
There's things that made me think differently. What I think has helped for me the most is that it kind of made me a little bit more confident with what I already know, because there was you start to struggle through things, and then when you get shown by somebody that's as experienced as you are, then you start to think, oh, I remember that, and as things start coming back, so I feel a little bit more confident in my own ability just by spending the day on Python and on the course. And some of the extra resources that you showed us and some of the little ideas that you gave us, invaluable, I think, from today.
Sure, and again, thinking about the fact that you've all been together as a team today, Joe, you've been working with Jill pretty much all of the day.
Yeah.
When you've been on courses before and you're the only person there from your school, would you say you've got a little bit more value today because you've been working with somebody you
far
already know?
Far more value, because I'm far more confident working with people that I know.
So it was a little easier for you as well. Did you find, as the day went on, any of you, that you were saying, like, oh, yeah, if we were to do this with this, were you able to, like, sort of plan for the future as well at the same time?
We started talking about what you were saying about the Key Stage 3 curriculum, how we could just start putting that in little projects that we were already doing and building on that.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and I hope that soon you're going to be mentioning that you've tried some of these with your classes. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So there we have it. You've been listening to the Teach Computing podcast, which is curated by me, Alan O'Donoghue, and on Twitter I'm at TechnoTeacher, TEKNO Teacher. If you want to find out more, any links to any things that were mentioned in the podcast, if you want to find out about how you can get CPD for free in your school, just like the school in Darwin Vale, they managed to get free CPD for 5 teachers all in at once. They managed to get the type of training that they wanted. If you want to know a little bit more about things like Python programming, GCSE computing, Raspberry Pis, then just go to TechnoTeacher on Twitter, TEKNO Teacher, and you'll find links to many of these things I've talked about. Also, there are a number of people doing things just like this and sharing things freely online, and you can go to find out more about them. Visit the Computing at School community site. You just need to do a little search for Computing at School community, and you can sign up for free. You can be a teacher, or you might be interested in becoming a teacher, or maybe you want to support teachers, and there's lots of resources and forums and discussions and all kind of events there. Thank you very much for listening. I look forward to sharing some more ideas and opinions and discussions with you in our next Teach Computing podcast. Goodbye.